Live from America's finest city, this is Real Talk San Diego on ESPN 1700.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Happy Thursday. It's ESPN 1700 AM, the Real Estate Radio Hour. Today we are focusing on staying at home as long as possible, right? As long as possible. We have with us here today Damon DeMaria, second time repeat offender, right?
That's true.
That's true. Okay. He is the owner-operator of Best of Care, California Residential Elderly Care Certified. Their website is bestofcare.com. And he mentioned to us in the green room here that 94% of his clients are female.
That
right?
is true.
And we'll get down to the bottom of that a little bit later. Also with us today, we have the ladies here from Hospice of North Coast, Sharon Lutz. She is the executive director, as well as Dina Kelsey. She is a director of business development. Thank you, ladies, for joining us.
Thank you.
So we're going to start this off with home care and how that process allows someone to stay in the home, well, longer. And we're making the assumption that people want to stay in their home. And I guess we should point out what the alternative is. What is it we are saying is going to happen or you would go if you're not staying in your home?
Well, and thanks for asking. There are numerous alternatives. And maybe I'll start by, there was an AARP study, and it was said that 98% of the people when polled, elderly, wanted to stay in their home. So okay. I would argue that if it's 98%, 2% maybe just didn't understand the question. So
everybody,
we
wants
can call
to get
it
home.
Everyone. Yes,
got it.
And so alternatives would be assisted living facilities, moving in with a family, ending up in a skilled nursing facility or a convalescent hospital type environment. So those would be alternatives. And then it might be easy now for you to better understand why the 99% of the people would say, "I want to stay home." Okay, it's an independence thing as well.
Yeah, so status quo. We want nothing to change. That's the idea. People don't like change, or at least not your clients anyway. They want to stay at home where they're comfortable, where they're familiar, where the surroundings are the same. And basically, your company is set up, or one of the things you do is to allow people to do that, right? So let's make the assumption 100% of people want to stay at home for as long as they can. One solution is to bring the care to them, right? That's the idea. So you run through a whole lot of situations, and we're going to go through a bunch of these of all, well, pitfalls and advantages to in-home health care and what to avoid as far as 1099 insurance. We're going to touch on a variety of those things, but keeping your parents in the house for as long as they want to be, and let's just talk briefly about the range of services that your caregivers could provide.
You bet. Well, so we could start with the basic activities of daily life. So if you lost your driver's license, a caregiver could facilitate that. If you were looking to continue with social outings and doctors and you know, outside activities, those would be great activities that we would provide.
Well, hold on just a sec. Let's back up. If I lost my driver's license, my caregiver is going to take me to the DMV?
I'm in many instances, you know, you have to get approved by your primary care physician or by site to be able to have your driver's license. So
sure, but lost, I don't mean taken away, which is what you're describing, but I was walking down the street and it fell out of my pocket. Right? That kind of lost, right? The caregiver's process, that's something within their scope that to assist.
Well, certainly.
Right?
So all activities of daily life. And then, of course, we would provide a much higher level of medically based care. So assistance with ambulation and physical therapy and, you know, non-sterile wound dressing and all of those types of things in addition.
Got it. So daily life assistance plus a slight touch in the medical world. I mean, I know you have to stay, you have to ride that line, right? There's only so far you can go. But that's interesting to know that should I need banking or stuff like that, there's someone there to help. And I think that's one of the services you provide, right?
You bet.
That is, I mean, I went to the DMV somewhat recently, so that's why I jumped onto that one. It was miserable.
Understood.
It was absolutely miserable. Okay.
Well, so, we can't help with that, unfortunately.
Got it. Okay.
I might note, you know, about 45% of our caregiving business is with hospice.
I see.
Hospice meaning that when someone is under a hospice order, and then they need care, and so that's a big component of our business. And those folks are typically less hiring us so that they can go to Bridge Club with their girlfriends. They're hiring us for more clinical care as well.
That makes sense. So I've heard of the concept of turn down care, or, you know, like, I guess, pills morning and evening. So it doesn't have to be all day right off the bat, right?
Well, that's true. And in fact, one case in particular, a Mr. and Mrs. F, you know, we served them for about 2.5 years with 2-hour shifts. That's it. 2-hour shifts. I think it was once or twice a week. And we have since been serving them with 24-hour care until the passing of one of the spouses. And we're still with the other spouse in 24-hour care. So that would be an example of the full range of gamut from a 2-hour visit shift. Let's make sure everybody's okay and fix a couple of meals, very light activities of daily life, all the way through to bathing and brief, changing of briefs and that type of thing.
Got it. So it can ramp up.
That's
right?
True.
Right. And so in that 2-hour shift you're describing, they were doing meal preparation was one of the things they were doing, right?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay, got it.
And in that scenario, what's really nice is we were a backup. So they became comfortable with the mechanism that is, frankly, a stranger coming to the home, helping them with things like bathing and toileting, which are not real exciting things to have a caregiver or a nurse help you with. And then they were able to feel comfortable with that and then transition. And so I know the adult children were also very comforted that they already have this in place. They feel comfortable with an agency. And then if and when an increased need occurs, someone gets a cold for our clients turns to pneumonia very, very quick. And so if they need the help, then all of a sudden they just with a phone call are in a position to go from 2-hour shifts to 24-hour shifts, as an example.
I see. We're talking with Damon DeMaria. He's the owner of Best of Care. His website is bestofcare.com. That's the website, bestofcare.com. So I would say one of the barriers with this service is the overall concept that someone has to be there all the time and a stranger in their house, just like you just described there. That 2-hour shift was a great way to get them over the idea that there's a stranger in their home. I would imagine you run into that all the time.
Well, it's true. And let me maybe just talk a moment about the generational differences. So our caregivers are clinically sound. They've done clinical experience. So they have a VN or a CNA, that type of thing. But help me to understand. Let me help you to understand real quick. The folks that we take care of came from a World War II, Great Depression time. They're very conservative in nature. Right now, you know, on lunch break, many of us might go to the gym and then shower and go to a co-ed gym and then shower after your workout. That's not what people in their 90s typically did. A much more conservative way of thinking. And so all of a sudden, then you get a nurse coming in saying, I'm going to help you with these, you know, very personal care components. And you can see how quickly the independence, all of a sudden, it's a barrier to starting care. So yes, a 2-hour shift to start is a great, you know, potential.
Yeah, I would imagine that there's a lot of commonly resistance from the clients. I would imagine a situation set up where the children of the elderly are looking for help, and there's a lot of resistance from mom and dad. And I think I know you've mentioned a couple other ways in the past, but the ramping up of care certainly sounds like a nice one. Now we talked just a little bit about the what a caregiver does and where that place stops, their job stops and starts, and then where hospice might step in, and that's why we have the ladies from a hospice of North Coast here. So when we get back, we are going to talk with Dina Kelsey about Healthcare Decision Day. And when is that?
Today. Yeah.
Healthcare Decision Day with Dina Kelsey from Hospice of North Coast. Their website, hospicenorthcoast.org. Ahead of us when we get back. Back. We've been talking with Damon DeMaria. He is the owner of Best of Care. His website is bestofcare.com. That's the website, bestofcare.com. We're going to talk with Dina Kelsey. She is a director of business development with Hospice of North Coast. Their website is hospicenorthcoast.org. One more time, hospicenorthcoast.org. And we're going to talk about healthcare decision day, which is today.
Yes, it is.
Today. Okay. What does it mean?
It is a national effort to recognize something very, very important. And that is people putting things in writing to spell out what their wishes are so that their family doesn't have to guess.
Okay. What would I put in writing? I want to be healthy?
That's assumed.
Okay. We got to get more in depth than that, huh? Yeah. What would be advantageous to have in writing?
Okay. Well, there are several different versions. The one I really want to focus on is called the Pulsed form, but I want to mention the others as well because they may have things that names that people recognize more readily. There's the Five Wishes. That became, I think, more entered everyone's awareness several years ago with the Terri Schiavo case. And then there's the Advanced Healthcare Directive. And every state has their own form. You can actually do one yourself. And that is one where people spell out who they are naming to make their decisions for them if they cannot express their own wishes.
Okay.
And they usually have maybe a primary and an alternate. And that's great. They also have some things there that they enter about treatments they would consider for themselves, things that they absolutely do not want done. And they can change that over time. People's wishes change as they go through different experiences. But there were pitfalls with those documents. And that is that they are not observed, cannot readily be observed by healthcare professionals, specifically paramedics. And so the Pulsed form, the California Pulsed form, began January 1st of 2009. And it's been revised a couple of times. And we have a new one. Old ones are still in effect if people have those. They're still valid. But we've made the form a little more simple each time it's been revised. And so it's great because it's something that gets signed by your doctor. Once you've filled it out, you have your doctor sign it, and it's your property. And it becomes a standing medical order on your behalf. So any medical professional that it's presented to, they're legally bound by it.
We're talking with Dina Kelsey. She is Director of Business Development with Hospice of North Coast. Their website is hospicenorthcoast.org. That's the website, hospicenorthcoast.org. We're talking about Healthcare Decision Day. And I just want to go back a second. The Advanced Healthcare Directive, as you mentioned, a pretty common one, I think probably the most common. I've heard of it a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of people out there have heard of it. And you mentioned one of the downsides is, yeah, if there's an emergency, it may not be around, right?
That too. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Well, you said won't necessarily be observed by the paramedics,
right?
What do you mean by that? They don't necessarily honor it? Is that what you mean?
Right. They have certain protocols. And so the beauty of the Pulsed form, and again, Pulsed, P-O-L-S-T, stands for Physician's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment. What's on the top left corner of that form is an emblem that's very important. That has to be on a document for the paramedics to observe. That document to follow what's written there. And that's not included on the Advanced Healthcare Directive. So it's great to have the two documents, if you will.
I see. So a paramedic shows up and, you know, his protocol for a certain ailment is X, and the Advanced Healthcare Directive and your Pulsed form might say something different, where in which he's only going to follow it if the Pulsed form is present.
Right.
Well, I can see how the paramedics come under liability once they, you know, go away from their common protocol. So that's one of the reasons that you're suggesting this form is there.
Absolutely.
So do the acronym one more time. P-O-L-S-T. Tell me what that stands for again.
Physician's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
And where do I get this form?
You can get it online.
Okay.
And it's white online, but generally we put it on pink, bright pink paper. That's the standard throughout the state.
Okay.
That way it keeps it from getting lost so readily because we have lots of white papers.
Got it.
So they can go onto there's a website where they can go and get that. And let me read that. Let me see if it's on here. Oh, you go to www.capolst.org.
That's P-O-L-S-T. And combine that with your advanced healthcare directive, right?
Yes.
And have them both.
Yes.
Okay. That's good advice. Now, you mentioned five wishes. What's that?
That is a document that I think was more prevalent further east in the nation. And I haven't worked with that one specifically, but it's a name
so
that people...
So in California, we use the Advanced Healthcare Directive and the Pulse Form primarily.
They can still... People can have the five wishes if they're more comfortable with that. Uh-huh. I would encourage them to also have that accompanied by the Pulsed Form.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Now, I have here this Butterfly Release Memorial. Tell me about that.
That's our annual event. We do it every spring. And it's coming up. It's on Sunday, May 17th at Agua Hedionda Lagoon, which is in Carlsbad, at the Cannon exit. And it's there's a big white tent. It's covered but with open sides. Everybody gets a butterfly. And it's a memorial. It really talks about the emphasis is on, you know, people that have passed on, but the metamorphosis aspect of change.
I see. I see. And it's free.
It is
free. Free to attend. And I have it here Sunday, May 17th, from 2 to 4.
Yes.
Right. And your website, more information on this thing? Your website?
There is. And there's also a phone number that they could call if they are so inclined, so we can make sure to reserve a butterfly for them.
Okay. The website here is hospicenorthcoast.org. That's the website, hospicenorthcoast.org. And the number here is 760-448-4204, 760-448-4204. We're talking with Dina Kelsey. She is the Director of Business Development. We've talked a little bit about Healthcare Decision Day, which is today. Does this happen only once a year?
It does. I mean, there's there's another month
this
that's kind of devoted to it, but yes.
What's the other month that's devoted to it? September?
I think it's October or November.
October, November.
Sorry, I'm not sure which.
We got to wait a whole two more quarters to get to that day. So today is the day.
Yeah.
Okay, we talked about, so with respect to decision, really what we're suggesting here is bringing awareness to the idea that if you have specific health decisions that you want to be invoked, you need to write them down and make them available, right? Is that the general idea,
Absolutely.
What we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And one more time, Advanced Healthcare Directive and the Pulse Form. Are there others that are necessary or just those two?
I would say those are sufficient with regard to your healthcare wishes.
Got it.
And I think what's important, sometimes people don't do these. They think, oh, I don't want to go to an attorney. That costs money. You don't need to go to an attorney for these.
These are all free.
They are. And they're, you know, you can get a healthcare professional to help you fill it out. Mm-hmm. It's something that I do. What I like about it is there's three sections on the form. One is about resuscitation. One is about general levels of care, and one is about artificial nutrition and hydration. If people aren't sure where they stand on one of those sections, that's okay. They don't have to give an opinion there. If you have strong feelings about the two of those sections, go ahead and complete it. The section that you leave blank, it would just default to the highest level of care in that section. Also, this is really easy to revise.
Okay.
And that's important. And I think the other reason people don't fill out these forms is they think, well, I'm not ready to give up my ability to speak for myself. I'm not there yet, so therefore I don't need it. That's why you do it now, before you're in that scenario where you haven't put your wishes down on paper. And also, if you can speak to someone, no matter what you have on this form, they need to go by what you tell them verbally. So there's really no risk in doing this form early. You still retain your right to express yourself for as long as you're able.
I see. So why does everybody not have this?
I don't know, because they need days like this to let them know it's okay.
I was just going to add, Ryan, that I think most people think it's when you're older. And so as you age, of course, you're going to have that in place. But we all know accidents happen. Unfortunately, people don't always know the time that something will happen that they can't make those decisions. So it's crucial that you do this almost for your family so you don't leave them with those decisions to make,
because
sometimes they're
right?
very hard decisions to make. And so if you've already filled this out, that poor wife or that husband, spouse that's left, you know, has your desire already. And so it's much easier on the family in a time of crisis.
We're talking with the ladies here from Hospice of North Coast, Sharon Lutz and Dina Kelsey, talking about healthcare decision day. Now, you mentioned the Terry Schiavo situation. Why don't you briefly kind of refresh our memory as to what happened there and how this might have helped?
That was a situation where a woman was in a coma. Her parents wanted certain things for her. Her spouse wanted something else. And it was very long, legal, protracted battle amidst family members. So it was just a very sad situation.
And both of the impression that what they were, the opinion they were giving would be the same one that Sherry would want. Is that correct? That was the big idea, right? She didn't write down what she wanted, so people were guessing what she wanted.
Right. Right.
Got it. So, okay. One more time. Healthcare Decision Day. We're talking with Dina Kelsey. Her website is hospicenorthcoast.org. That's the website. hospicenorthcoast.org. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Damon DeMaria, owner of Best of Care. Find out why 94% of his patients are female and talk about how to pay for it. Ahead of us, when we come back. The ladies of Hospice of North Coast, Sharon Luntz and Dina Kelsey. Their website, hospicenorthcoast.org. One more time, hospicenorthcoast.org. You can go to their website, submit the Contact Us button asking for the Advanced Healthcare Directive and the Pulsed form, and they will email them to you for free. So you can make sure you have those in place. And Damon, during the break, you mentioned something that I thought was really important is back to the Terry Schiavo case. You know, a lot of people don't do this stuff now thinking that they're too young and don't need to bother with it. But it really is a situation when something happens to the young people who have parents to argue about how the care should be, that these forms really come into play. That's a very enlightening fact.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense. When you're
For what it's worth, I'm going to fill out a pulse myself in my mid-40s here.
Yeah, when you're 95 years old, there's no parents. Your parents aren't around to argue about how you should be cared for, right? There's only one, well, maybe one opinion, you know, one spouse. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a lot of sense. So one more reason, healthcare decision day. Get it done. Go to the website, hospicenorthcoast.org. Okay, Damon DeMaria, Best of Care, his website, bestofcare.com, 94% female. Why?
Well, a couple of reasons.
Let's be clear, clients. 94% of your clients is what we're saying.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I should probably start, I'm a very proud male, okay? but I will mention there's quite a few reasons why more of our clients are female. So the first and most foremost one is that women do live longer, okay, by statistics. They live considerably longer. The other thing, I believe, you know, women are more social animals. They, I don't have statistics on this, but I'm betting they get together for coffee more than their men peers. They're nurturers, okay, by nature. They're also very social animals. I think they're more in touch with their bodies as well than men. And what that generates is men become, I don't know the other word for it, but men become liars in the sense that, oh, no, I'm fine. My breathing's fine. My back is fine. And we're very reluctant. If everyone's reluctant to get care, men and women, men are more reluctant for care. Okay. When we come in for a care situation, very oftentimes men are the ones that are first, you know, having extreme ambulatory issues and almost not able to bear weight before, you know, before, and there's not a whole bunch of support mechanisms in place.
So they're way worse off before they bring in help.
Oftentimes, you know, and I think that's sad as a male. Oftentimes it also puts an extra burden on the spouse. Okay. If you're in your 90s and you've been married for 60 or 70 years, very oftentimes, you know, women in that generation very oftentimes were the primary homemaker. And so what that generates is these great ladies are going to go to the ends of the earth to serve their husband. They're working with a back that shouldn't be lifting and turning and doing these things. And they're doing it out of this incredible force and love. And what that generates is the caregiver injury of the spouse. And it generates some things. Okay, men are more... A funny thing, you know, men are more apt to say, oh, I'll fix it with duct tape than women. So if we can use that silly analogy, I think the same thing happens with regard to care.
I get it. We're talking with Damon DeMaria. He is the owner of bestofcare.com. Their website is bestofcare.com. So let's talk about paying for caregiving. You have a slew of acronyms here about ways you can pay for it. How do we pay for it?
Well, and good point. You know, we're here, we're a non-skilled caregiving agency, and we're here with hospice. Hospice is typically paid for by medical insurance. And let me just get out a couple of pieces of bad news. Non-skilled caregiving is not typically covered by medical insurance. Okay. So another piece of bad news, the primary way to pay for care is oftentimes private pay. So that's the most unfortunate, that's an unfortunate component. And I will tell you, it's a huge barrier to entry, be it financial, be it seniors seeing that as a burden, even if it's their own funds, they just don't want to pay privately. So let's get to the good news now. There are some other components of how you can pay for care. Okay. The first one would be long-term care insurance. So you know, long-term care insurance is medically underwritten. So if you're under hospice care or you're in your 90s, it will be very challenging to get. Okay. You have to take a quick physical, but long-term care insurance is an auxiliary extra disability type of insurance. And it pays oftentimes for either assisted living care or home care in the home. So that's the primary, I mean, if you, that's the one you want to make sure your parents, if they have it, they're utilizing it. Okay. There's okay. Oftentimes an exclusionary period, which is similar. I liken it to a deductible. You crash your car, you owe the first $500, but then the insurance is going to pay for everything above that. And there's an exclusionary period of a quantity of days. So long-term care insurance is pretty common out there. There are some VA benefits. And the thing that I would note, you know, there's a lot of different VA benefits. I would suggest getting in touch with someone who understands. So you just have a basic understanding of if your parents might qualify. Okay, some of the VA benefits will cover surviving spouses. So if we just talked about women living longer and, you know, we want to help mom, if she's a surviving spouse, some of those benefits would cover her care as well, even if she never, ever was in the military. So that's something to note. The other one, if you're of low means and low income, IHSS is in-home support services in California. That's the social services wing. And oftentimes that is an option. If you do have a high level of income or a medium to high level of income and assets, you probably wouldn't qualify. I'd invite you to look down that route, though. So IHSS is another big opportunity for care. Workman's comp, if you're younger and you're under workman's comp, you can get care through that. And then some disability and health insurance. But again, the health insurance component, and there are some that will pay, it's very, very rare.
Got it.
But I do, I take pride in, we consult where we offer all of the different pay modules, and then let's knock them off the list so that we don't skip one.
Makes sense. We're talking with Damon DeMaria. He is the owner of Best of Care. Their website is bestofcare.com. That's the website, bestofcare.com. So there are other care agencies out there that you're competing with, as well as the uninsured, non-1099 Craigslist worker, right?
Agreed.
Why should we be so scared about just putting an ad up on Craigslist and hiring that person?
Right. Well, a whole bunch of different reasons. The first couple is unless you 1099 that person, it's not in line with the IRS tax code, which is a law. The second most component or biggest reason I would see is, you know, you have a single point of failure. And what that means is you could get, and you can really luck out and get a great caregiver via a friend or a neighbor or even a family loved one. The challenge is if they have a car problem or they get sick or there's a, you know, any, that's a single point of failure. So if you only need care once a week for a couple of hours, that's a pretty, you know, that would be tough for a true agency to compete with. But what happens is if you really need care and you have a single point of failure and the car breaks down, you go from, and you're the adult child caring for mom and dad, we quickly go from a dangerous spot to a you go and fill in, take time out of your life, out of your work and go fill in. And so an agency is able to provide, you know, a lot of different caregivers. If one's not a fit for a personality reason or for a skill set reason, they can get another one. And so those are a couple. A true agency will also be insured, and we can go through that.
Maybe let's talk about insurance. What briefly touch on what insurance is provided, and why does it matter?
Well, you bet. And you know, the biggest one is workman's comp. Theft bond, everyone asks, what if something's stolen in the home? Which is great, and we are insured. Every CASA certified agency would be insured for that. But workman's comp, you know, a soft tissue back injury is going to have a much more profound impact on mom or dad's estate than, respectfully, a $10,000 ring that's stolen. Okay, both bad situations, but that is a big one. Renter's insurance, homeowner's insurance does not cover employees in the home. And so that's a big component of concern you should
have. Well, let's go back to that one more time. A soft tissue back injury, which would be something that might happen from the uninsured, non-1099 Craigslist employee, could potentially be way more expensive than a $10,000 ring stolen. That's interesting. Because I would imagine most people think the exact opposite.
You're right. Everyone's afraid of something being stolen. I would tell you the injury when someone says, I was injured in your home and now you're liable, how are we going to fix this? And they get an attorney to help them with that process. That is something that you should be very aware of. And if they're not, even if you 1099 them, which means that you send something to the government and you send something to them and I've paid you X amount of dollars and you need to pay taxes for it, if they don't pay it, so you've done the 1099 process, if they don't pay it, you're still potentially liable for the payroll tax and for the tax if they're not going through that process. So there is a real, you know, and it's the lawful way is to use someone who is processing the payroll tax.
Paying taxes.
As well. You bet.
Yeah, makes sense. We're talking with Damon DeMaria. He is the owner and operator of Best of Care. His website is bestofcare.com. One more time, bestofcare.com. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Sharon Lutz. We're going to talk about what to look for when searching for hospice care ahead of us when we come back. We've been talking with Damon DeMaria. He is the owner-operator of Best of Care. His website is bestofcare.com. Going to shift gears here over to Hospice of North Coast. Speaking with Sharon Lutz, she is the executive director. And you have a four-page flyer here. Four pages on what you should look for when choosing hospice for your loved ones, and I think it may be relevant to briefly point out what hospice is. Why don't you tell everybody what that is?
Hospice is a benefit that is provided by currently Medicare and private insurance. It is for a patient, an individual who has a terminally diagnosed illness. That means they are at the end of life. It's ordered by a physician. It's a family's choice to decide which hospice they would like to use. So if you go to the hospital and you've been diagnosed, say, with a cancer that there's no treatment, that hospital may say, we have a hospice right here and they can come and tell you about that benefit. But you have a right to say, you know, I think I'd like to interview three or four hospices, or maybe you already have a hospice that you know, someone else had that hospice and they thought it was wonderful service. So you are allowed to make that decision. It is not decided by a physician or a hospital which hospice you decide to use. It is the patient and family's decision.
Got it. Got it. And so I read through here, you've got 17 important questions that one should go through when interviewing. And I would imagine there's probably more. So we'll consider these the top 17 and just kind of been flipping through them. But accredited and national organization, there's a hospice accreditation.
There is a hospice accreditation. There is the Joint Commission. I think many people know it as JACO. That is an organization that comes out, and after you have been through licensing, you get a license just like any business. Then they go through all of the important medical investigation to make sure you have everything in place that Medicare says you must have to run a certified hospice. And so it takes you up to another level of care, the standard from your nursing staff to your physicians to all of the quality is really then deemed by Joint Commission. And I think that's important. If that agency's gone to the next level, they're taking it very serious, the kind of care they're providing.
Well, you have on here a family evaluation survey. What does that mean?
Well, after a patient has been on hospice and now that patient has passed, we send out, or we did send out, a survey that says, tell us how we did. And basically, you report back, did you feel comfortable providing care for your loved one? Did you have full understanding of the disease process? Were you surprised or not feeling confident when that patient passed? You had plenty of information. Did you know about medications? Did you understand medical equipment, supplies? It just, there's 42 questions that was on our past survey. Medicare has now developed their own survey that they will send families. And so it really is the responsible part of the agency to make sure their staff understands that they are going to be under a huge focus group looking at how well did we provide the care. So that's why I think it's important that families and the patient get really educated about what they should look for when they go to choose a hospice.
Talking with Sharon Lutz, she is the Executive Director of Hospice of North Coast. The website is hospicenorthcoast.org. That's the website, hospicenorthcoast.org. Going over, well, I've got a list of 17 questions you should make sure you ask your hospice caregiver when you're in, you know, when in interviewing process. And again, more information, hospicenorthcoast.org. This one's kind of a long one. Does the hospice owner operate a care facility to provide home-like care in a hospice residence, hospital, or nursing home? So I think what you're saying is, when I think of hospice, you're going to the client's home. But what you're describing here is, I think, the opposite.
Exactly. When you are under hospice care, there are four different levels of care. Routine, respite. You can have a family member says, I've been caring for my husband for, you know, the last 6 months and I'm exhausted. I need a rest. Medicare provides for that. And so for 5 days, you can have your loved one or the patient go to a skilled nursing facility and they can be cared for by other people so that you can get a rest. Well, some hospices have built or created a inpatient medical home. And so our specific hospice has a 6-bed residential, but it's for inpatient care of a hospice patient. And so not all hospices have them, but some do. And that's a good question to ask, because if, let's say, your husband has a very complex illness and there's lots of symptoms to manage, they may need to go in for a few days to have those symptoms get under control. And so that's an important question. Do you have an inpatient unit? Do you provide other kinds of residential care for hospice patients? Those are important questions to ask that agency.
So let's talk about the house you guys have, Pacifica House.
Yes.
Right? That's what it's called. Tell us about Pacifica House.
Pacifica House is a beautiful home, 6-bedroom, 6-bathroom. Every patient has its own private room. And it has literally been turned into a medical model home where you have RN staff all around the clock. We have LVNs as well to assist. We have CHHAs who give activities of, you know, daily living care, bath aid. We have a social worker who works with families who are there in crisis. We have a chaplain. We have volunteers who come with music therapy, pet therapy, massage therapy. We really, it's a home-like setting. A family member can spend the night, every night that the patient is there. And that staff really has all been trained. They are all certified in hospice and palliative care. And they get those symptoms or whatever is going on with that patient that's acute right then under control so the patient can return home. Sometimes patients come there straight out of a hospital setting, and the patient may pass in the home, in our inpatient home. Other times the patient may come there just for a five-day respite, and then they'll go back home again. But it is a beautiful, lovely setting. It is very serene. Carlsbad is a lovely community. That is the one thing that we see is unique about our hospice, is the fact that it's very community-driven and very much supported by the communities we serve.
I see. And so how can I find out more information about Pacifica House?
If you go to our website, hospicenorthcoast.org, we have a whole area that you can ask, see all the pictures of the house. You can see what we do. Again, if you contact us, if you were a physician or a medical person, again, you can go on there and it'll tell you all the things that we are qualified to do in our inpatient home.
Got it. Okay. We have time for just one more here, and it's the 24-hour. Will staff come to the home if there's a crisis at any time of day on the weekends? And who's available? Nurses, doctors, social workers, and chaplains. That sounds like an important one.
Ryan, that is one of the most important questions you can ask when you are interviewing hospices. Hospice is an expensive care. It really is. And every Medicare recipient has this benefit, and each hospice is given a certain amount per day to care for that loved one. So it is costly, but a lot of hospices, at the after hours, after 5 o'clock and on weekends, they pretty much triage when they need to care for a patient after hours. Some hospices send nurses out, and I'm one of those that believe if someone's calling you at 2 a.m. with a crisis with their loved one, they don't want someone to talk on the telephone. They want someone to come and support them and help them get through that crisis. So I am adamant that that's a question every family should ask. How do you manage after hours? Because we all know we can call, you know, other friends, we can call people for help 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. It's those after hours, 2 a.m. on a Saturday night, that who's going to come and support me? And we at Hospice of the North Coast believe that's the time that you better be there.
That certainly sounds like an important one. We've been talking with Sharon Lutz as well as Dina Kelsey. They are with Hospice of North Coast. The website, hospicenorthcoast.org. That's the website, hospicenorthcoast.org. As well as Damon DeMaria. He is the owner of Best of Care. His website is bestofcare.com. That's the website. bestofcare.com. I want to thank you all for joining us.
Thank
Glad
you.
To be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Until next week. Thank you.